Welcome to Hot Air, episode number 9 of the 2017 season. My name, of course, is Greg Esser. Hot Air, if you don't know, is the DC Breezes podcast, DC, the representatives of Washington, DC, for the AUDL, American Ultimate Disc League. A couple things I want to cover today up front, and then I've got a short interview on the back of it. It is with a player from another franchise on the East, a player from the Philadelphia Phoenix. About this time last year, I brought on Sean Keegan of the New York Empire and a captain up there. This year I've got a player from Philadelphia. He also happens to be my brother, so we'll get some good banter in. I think as brothers are wont to do, we jump from one topic to the next, reading each other's faces and minds, talking about things that we've talked about sometimes privately as we drive around in cars or whatever else. And so one of those topics that I think we cut just a little bit short is the story of the Philadelphia Phoenix and their border crossings in 2017. I'm not sure that these have made it out into the public eye, and I'm not going to be the one to divulge everything that I have heard and partially hearsay, but I will say they've had some trouble crossing the Canadian border this year, and filling in the rest of that conversation just to say they've actually had to leave players behind and not been able to play with them for the duration of the day. If there's ever a Philadelphia Phoenix podcast, let's hope they come out with The Bird is the Word or Joe Phoenix or something like that for the name of that podcast. They can talk about it there. If there's a tell-all novella, they can address it there. But I just wanted to finish out that thought as we joke a little bit about the troubles the Philadelphia Phoenix have had with border crossings in this season. Another thing I want to amend comes from last podcast. I talked a lot with Tyler Byram about the different playoff scenarios that exist for the Breeze. All of those are still in play, very relevant. Go back and listen to that podcast. Go ahead and check out Tyler's article that's on the DC Breeze website right now. He goes through those scenarios and the point differentials in great detail. But when Tyler and I talked about it, we mentioned that, first of all, it's the record on the year, followed by a head-to-head record if they are tied against another team, followed by point differential. From there, we thought it was point differential for your team for the entirety of the year, not just head-to-head against the team you're tied with. That is, in fact, not correct. It actually goes to a coin flip to determine the record, which is very interesting indeed, and I can only hope in the future, distant future of the AUDL, a series of coin flips that land on edge several times, need to be televised, and I could put my name in the hat to be able to narrate such an occasion. I think that'd be a great use of my announcing talents to narrate coin flips and stream it on the internet, maybe put it on the ESPN1. I think that would be a monumentous occasion. But so that's the breakdown and the final bit about tiebreakers. I should say the game that every Breeze fan should be tuning into, despite the Breeze not playing in it, is up in Toronto on the 23rd of July, a Sunday. The Breeze season is wrapped up, but the New York Empire go on the road to play the Toronto Rush. And we've got to hope that New York can get it together, get their act together. They've kind of had some ups and downs in this 2017 season, but it would help the Breeze immensely if the Empire were able to go on the road, get that win in Toronto. It would be a huge coup because Toronto hasn't lost to the New York Empire ever. But if there's a year to do it, I would think this could be it. And if the Empire win that game, the Breeze will get not one, but two home games. They'll finish ahead in the rankings based on the tiebreakers to Toronto Rush, and then based on record, assuming they win against the Phoenix here, win out the season in that way, against the Montreal Royale. Other issues to address up front here. There is one last game. It is against Philadelphia. It is on July 22nd. Philadelphia has been streaming regularly, and they've got a great crew streaming those games, so make sure you tune in, DC fans, to see all of the action that goes down up in Philadelphia. Heck, it's a short enough game. If you want to make sure you see the DC Breeze one more time this season, chances are they'll have a playoff game at home, but to guarantee it, drive on up to Philadelphia, go to Conshohocken, and see that game at 6:30 on Saturday the 22nd. Other item, congratulations to Joe Freund. He recently made the U.S. Under-24 team. Really exciting there. Joe Freund's ripped it up for the Breeze this year. A limited amount of games. He joined halfway through after his Virginia Tech season ended, and he's made a huge impact for the Breeze. No surprises making the U.S. Under-24 team. Congratulations to Joe. I missed doing an under-overrated section with my brother Matt on this podcast. I can't fully speculate what Matt would say for everything, but as we will address, this is the first international episode of Hot Air, and we are on the beaches, the Mediterranean beaches of the country of Malta. Safe to say they are underrated. We've been doing a lot of those. That's as far as I can go into the under-overrated section. Our partners for Breeze for the year, quick thanks goes off the top to Oak Creek Apparel, Papa John's Pizza, Atlas Brewing, Big Board Bar, Layout Gloves, Discraft, and MedStar. That's all I've got up front here. Over to Brooke Royals. Play that intro theme music. Nepotism episode of Hot Air. This week I have the fortune to sit down with a player for the Philadelphia Phoenix, also my brother. His name is Matt Esser. Matt, warm up the mics for me here.
How you doing, Greg? We're having a great time here in Malta, getting all international with the DC Breeze podcast.
Yeah, Hot Air goes international. Hashtag up this episode on Twitter with all the great international puns you can think of. But we are in Malta, outside the capital city of Valletta. We are on the north side. And we're going to talk some ADL Ultimate, despite the time zone difference.
Definitely, and it is a bit breezy here.
It is. It's an island in the middle of the Mediterranean, and we're getting that vibe. Also breezy back in the States, though. The Breeze had locked up a playoff spot the last time we spoke, and the positioning of that playoff spot is still up in the air. You've got one more game to go in the season. You know, that game is against DC, so I think we've got a lot of good things to get into here. And so let's talk a little bit first about the past, and then we'll jump into the future. The Breeze and the Phoenix have matched up twice already this year. There's one more game to go. In the past games, Phoenix won one at home, and the Breeze have won one, the one that played in D.C. Talk to me a little bit about those two games, and talk to me a little bit about what you saw, what worked for the Phoenix in one, what didn't work in the other.
All right, so first thing about the D.C. Breeze is they're a very, very talented team. It's really cool this year that we're playing against Daryl, who was my coach in the past and did coach many of us.
Sure, a guy that's coached you a couple times.
Yeah, definitely.
Both in the ADL and the MLU.
Also, yeah, coached the Phoenix. But a great coach, loved playing for him. And the big difference, I think, from this year, the game we lost against DC and the game we won, is that when DC came up to us, we had a good home field advantage. We gave each other some speeches where we really brought each other up, saying that DC walked up here thinking that they can walk all over us, but we're not going to let them come into our home and take us down like that easy. So we were pretty pumped to play them. And I think, you know, traveling does play a toll on people and teams. It's a 3-hour drive, maybe 2.5-hour drive up to Philly. Which doesn't seem like a lot, but it's just you're in a different place. You just sat on the bus and The home team just ate Wawa, which is delicious.
Wawa drives you to success?
Wawa drives us to success. A lot of the teammates all go to Wawa before the games, and it's definitely a Philly thing, definitely giving us a home field advantage there.
Are you playing for a future Wawa sponsorship for the Philadelphia Phoenix?
That would be amazing.
Yeah?
I think we should do that.
Cool. Okay, so what on the field then happened? You know, so, I mean, really, if I remember that first game in Philadelphia, it was a game where there weren't a lot of defensive breaks until, well, so maybe the first 5 minutes, the Breeze got a couple. And then the last 5 minutes, the Phoenix D-line turned it around and got just exactly enough breaks to get to win the game by one, 22-21 in favor of the Phoenix.
Yeah, so playing defense against DC, we kind of knew a lot of the things that they do. They use some of the same speech that we've used with the MLU and the Spinners. But one of the big things we do on defense is try to shut down their pool play, because they always isolate the first cutter. So when we can, you know, mark an in and an out, poach someone else, and really cover that first cutter, then they have to hit their dump, and it shuts things down a little bit.
Yeah.
And they didn't have Kolick there the first game, I believe.
That's correct.
Who a lot of times was their first cutter or their first thrower.
Initiation cut, yeah.
Exactly. So, I mean, that kind of helped us, I guess, but also the fact that we really tried many different defenses. You know, we have 5 or 6 different defensive looks that we try to use. And even when one is successful, we try to switch it up and use a different one so the first team doesn't get used to that defense.
That's interesting that you guys are changing your looks and you're capable of tweaking it, comfort or not, just to keep the offense on their toes.
Yeah, I definitely like to do that a lot.
Okay, so then turn the coin over then. What didn't work for you then? I mean, I would imagine you're keeping a lot of those same things in your head. Now you're on the road. There's no pregame wah-wah. Actually, I think there might be a Wawa in the burbs of D.C., but you guys didn't find it.
Is it really? We need to get that location down.
Yeah. Oh, I just gave away the trade secrets. Okay, so anyhow, so you're down in D.C., you're Wawa-less, and, you know, what didn't go right then, you know, particularly for the D-line, something you saw up close and personal when you were down in D.C.?
Yeah, D.C., they worked it. Even when we shut down that first cut, maybe they practiced it, but they knew where the second cut was coming as soon as the initiation got broken down.
It was later in the season, maybe, so some of that could have factored in as well.
And, like, we'd shut that first cut down with, you know, ins and out poaches or, you know, coming down in a wave, but it seemed like as soon as they hit the dump, then they had a second initiation ready to go, and it was usually that man that was poach.
Yeah. So when you have these different looks, I mean, I guess, like, most of them are man-based. Or player-to-player defense. You know, you're responsible for this person. So what else about those looks is really changing? Other than, you know, are you just taking a different player? I mean, you're taking ins and outs. Like, what else can you change in a defense?
Well, so I think,
what are the other levers that you pull?
I think the mentality and the team unity really needs to be there. Sometimes you play really, really hard D, where your hips are always with their hips. You're stopping trying to stop everything they do, using your body to take one away, using your position to take the other, like which way you're facing to take the other one away. But then there's the other mentality where I'm going to help out my teammates. So the first situation there, if you go to help out your teammate, then there's someone completely unmarked.
Yeah.
And the other mentality there is, hey, I'm going to work the switches. I'm going to get ready for someone to cut deep. I'm going to be the last back and get ready to work those switches. But the mentality needs to be there that we're either going man, where you're not switching, or that you're ready to switch at any moment.
So actually, there's an interesting thing, I think, embedded in that I want to draw out, which is, you know, hey, you can be the best kind of hip-to-hip, lockdown, two-foot-away defender, and I think what you're saying, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that is only so useful if someone else is playing kind of like a poachier, last-back style. It's really about, you know, everyone is in lockstep for a point versus everyone is a help defender the next point.
Exactly. You all need to be on the same page. And the goal is, when you're a lockdown defender, is to keep your hips tight enough that they don't want to throw it deep. And if they do, if it's a perfect pass, they'll probably catch it, but hopefully it won't be a perfect pass. It'll be a foot off and you'll get the D.
I think that's an interesting concept because, you know, I think there are players as well that excel more so at one or the other.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
To compose the perfect line that everyone is not only willing to get on the same page. I mean, that's willingness is a big part of it. It's like, hey, I play defense. I know I play defense the best by being, you know, 3 yards off and helping out someone else deep, playing a last back style, but then he's under all the time. And if everyone else is in lockstep, I know what I'm comfortable with, and then my guy just gets it under.
You're completely right. I kind of helped split the D-line this year into people that are going to lock down mm-hmm. for 20 seconds. That's really all you need in the ADO. 20 seconds to lock someone down.
Three throws.
And not let them catch it.
Yeah.
All right? And then there's other players that, you know, want them to hit the disc. Lots of passes back there. Which is another way to grind. But if you have half the team on the field doing one thing and the other half doing the other thing, it doesn't work out. It never does.
Yeah.
Because the people that need to lock it down for 30 seconds are then getting tired of locking it down while the other people are just poaching and kind of conserving their energy.
Yeah.
Another thing we can talk about is the fact that New York ran a straight-up zone against us. And that was when we were up in New York last game, and it really crushed us. And until now, we haven't really seen much success in just straight-up zone.
Yeah, what did that zone look like? Because I think that even within – I think there's been more zone thrown in the AUDL East this year than previous years in the AUDL. And I think we've seen some degree of success.
Yeah, I mean, I think so too. And it kind of bothers me that we got beat by it. But I think it was a 3-3-2.
Okay.
It's a 3-3-1.
Yeah, put the extra player on the field.
So yeah, a 3-3-1 is what New York did against us, and it was pretty effective. They had three people around the disc.
That's a traditional zone.
Yeah, traditional zone. And they put three people in their mid and one deep, and it kind of stopped all the deep shots. And the only look we really had, I think, was big hammer looks.
Yeah.
And we weren't making those throws, and we tried to chisel it all the way through, and it worked sometimes, but, you know, a third of the time they got a turn, and they took advantage of that.
Yeah, so I mean, so what do you think, is it the metagame of the AUDL that, like, we haven't seen a lot of zones, so someone had to figure it out sometime? I mean, it's tough as a primarily someone that's come up playing club and the smaller field, to transition those zones to the larger, wider field of the ADL. What has changed? Why are zones in vogue?
Zones are working because it takes advantage of people's lack of discipline. When you're a cutter and you are cutting like crazy and you never get the disc, it stinks. And then as soon as you get the disc, you're like, oh, we haven't done anything with the disc in the last 30 throws. I'm going to make something happen. And that's when someone throws a big throw and then it gets turned over.
Yeah. Maybe actually the timer nature of the AUDL also contributes to that. In club, you play all day. You know, you know there's another game behind this one. But also you know that, you know, you could win this game. I guess that applies to the AUDL as well. You could win this game 10-9. But just watching that clock tick by in a very visible place makes you a little more trigger happy.
And the clock definitely changes defense in that way, and the fact that when you see 30 seconds up on the board, you do something completely different. And, you know, on offense and defense.
Yeah.
Because you want to be the last team to get that shot at the end zone.
Sure, and there's four of those.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, those 4 points could win, you know, I don't know, 80% of AUDL games, a 4-point differential.
Yeah, that's a great point. You talked about kind of the traditional zone up in New York, but I think one that I've seen a little bit too is almost a less structured zone as well.
Yeah, like
you want to talk about that?
Yeah, sure. I think a lot of good teams, Pittsburgh and college obviously, and Revolver, do a little bit of junk. And that is really important, that the players have spots on the field and they are getting a man as soon as the man enters their zone.
Mm-hmm.
Respect to where everyone else is on the field and when to transition from one person to another. But I think that's working. It's just changing it up so that the offense doesn't get used to the same thing over and over again.
So all these things said, all these trends in your mind, you know, is there one or two things that, this will come out before the game, so don't spoil it too much, but like, you know, that you'll walk in that huddle with the D-line for Philly and say, you know, here's how we approach the DC O-line. Here's a player I need to take away. Here's, you know, a strategy we know is coming. You know, what's your thoughts ahead of your final game of the season and one against the DC Breeze?
Yeah, so I definitely don't want to go ahead and give you guys all our trade secrets.
Yeah.
I know you're trying to pry that from me, Greg, but I'm going to keep those to myself. I
thought I was so clever.
But one thing that we really are going to do is vary up what we do on offense, and primarily since I'm a D-line captain, on defense.
Yeah.
Don't do the same thing over and over again.
Right.
Because then the offense gets used to doing the same thing over and over again and figures out how to make it work. So just changing it up a lot. We also, you know, have a list of all the players on GC, obviously, and we look at who does what.
We send you the list?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Huge mistake.
Yes, I know. Thanks, Daryl.
Daryl's playing both sides?
Yeah, he is.
Oh,
you
know. No.
Another thing we're going to do is we're going to take away what the players want.
Yeah.
Obviously, Wodash wants a deep, force him under. Let him get the under and make him make those big throws. And, you know, I think that we know and understand what almost every player wants, and we're going to try to take away what they want.
Got it. So now I'm going to ask you to put on that analyst hat, and then we can hit the beach, I promise.
Good.
And that is to say, you know, so we know who's in the playoffs. We know that the likely order, I think, if things fall to the favorites and you know, DC wins their final game against you guys, the order for the playoffs would be Toronto, followed by DC, followed by Montreal.
Yep.
Speculate a little bit with me here. You know, who do you see emerging from the AUDL East, and then, you know, what do you see happening in these two games?
So I think Montreal is going to come down to DC. That's because of the win-loss situation. And I think DC is probably going to take the home win there. Are they undefeated at home this year?
DC's undefeated at home.
Yeah.
First time that's happened in franchise history.
Yeah. So that's going to be big. And they're going to get a huge crowd out there if I know DC. And they're probably going to take it to Montreal pretty hard.
Yeah.
I also think they're a lot more talented than Montreal. And that's going to happen. Then DC is going to head up to Toronto. It's going to be quite a journey. I would think some people actually would even fly up to try to save themselves a 12-hour bus trip.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bus trip you've done many times.
Yeah, I mean, and I love it. It's a great team bonding experience, but it definitely takes it out of you when you stay in a hotel and take the buses and
all that. The border crossing. Yeah.
Yeah, we got stopped at the border.
It's kind of like your third game of the week.
Yeah, it's a it's a sore subject talking about border crossing.
Yeah. Save that for the Phoenix podcast.
Yeah, we'll save that for that. But I think that Toronto is probably going to beat DC up there. I mean, they have...
That's where your gut is right now?
I think so. I mean, I would love to see DC win, and I think they might be an overall better team than Toronto, because I'm never really impressed by Toronto. They're consistent, but I don't see the crazy athleticism. But I think that the home field advantage is going to give Toronto the win. But I would love to see DC take it home, and if they do, they'll be up in Montreal for the playoffs, and I think they could potentially finish in the top three. I'd love to see that.
Talk to me then. So if you think whoever rises out of the AUDL East is going to have a tough time in Montreal that weekend, you look around the country. Who you see in the rest of the world that it looks scary?
I mean, I think Dallas is probably going to win it all.
A repeat offender.
Yeah, definitely.
And a sleeping giant. I think a lot of people right now are high on Raleigh.
Yeah, I think so too. But I just think that when they need to step it up, Dallas will step it up.
Yeah.
I mean, they have some of the best players in the world, and so does Raleigh. But I think that Dallas is fighting for the win. We have the same owner, a partial owner, as Dallas.
Oh, so that's a little bit...
No bias, maybe?
Incest.
yeah.
The family podcast bringing you a little extra incest here from
the city. Yeah. The family with a PH, that's what we say there in Philly.
Okay.
But yeah, I think the Dallas has the big wigs that will pull it off if they need to.
Yeah, so I wonder from a player standpoint. I mean, I look at the West Coast, and maybe no one on the West Coast has as much of as great of a win-loss record, but it's because those teams are beating up each other.
Yeah.
I think anyone out of the West Coast, you know, be it the Spiders, be it the Flamethrowers, which look like the most likely candidates right now, I think those teams are going under the radar. Like, someone looks at a 8-6 team and says, you've lost almost half your games, but yeah, they're losing half their games against
really
the other best players in the country.
Yeah. I mean, you definitely make a point there, but I think it's so important that a team knows how to win. And Dallas is a team that has people that have won Worlds over and over again, and they are a team that knows how to win.
All right.
And they'll continue to do that.
Well, good. One thing I always do then, too, we've talked a lot of shop, a lot of business. Is there any burning issue on your mind, something you want to get out there? You've got a microphone in your hand. You've got a listenership of the East Coast and hopefully some new Philly and Maryland folks, but certainly the D.C. fan base as well. Any hot issue items, hot button items?
Yeah,
including the season here. You got a good one?
I got a good one for you, Greg.
All right.
So at the beginning of this season, the Phoenix haven't won in, I think, 2 years.
Yep.
And the last time they did really successfully was when I was with them, what year was that?
2013.
Your
two AUDL years, 13 and 17.
Yeah, so we made it to the playoffs against New York. But this year coming in, everyone said, you know, Philadelphia's still in the basement. Lots of fun comments around Philly about, you know, me being a mini fridge.
Yeah, there was an Altiworld article where you were a mini fridge.
I was a mini fridge, and that's great. I love mini fridges.
so versatile.
Yeah, you keep a lot of things in a mini fridge. Also, Marquez Brownlee was the plasma TV. Trey was
what a huge upgrade. Like that's a hot ticket item.
I mean, yeah, but mini fridges are awesome too. But Marquez is obviously very technical, so
okay.
He's got awesome TVs that are like paper thin, which is pretty cool.
It's a new.
It's awesome. It's awesome playing with him. He's a fun guy. But wait, back to my main topic here.
Okay,
people said, you know, Philly was in the basement.
Right.
We were last. We hadn't won in 3 years or 2 years. But I think this year was the beginning of our emergence out of the basement. We are no longer in last.
Some sort of phoenix metaphor.
Yeah, rising up from the ashes.
Yep,
that's what we're doing slowly. And this year we got a few wins under us.
You're 4-9, I think, at this point.
Yeah, 4 wins under us. Maybe
so
even
one more chance,
5 wins, which would be awesome. And just coming out of the basement, beating the bottom teams, and next year we're going to come back with even more vengeance.
Hey, you've beaten the top teams.
Oh yeah, we've beaten every team. Except
Toronto.
Except for Toronto.
That's right.
So, I mean, we proved that we have the ability. Now we just need to get our mentality right, knowing how to win. We figured out how to win, I think.
Yeah, so this is something you actually say a lot. We talk about this sometimes just cruising in a car somewhere. We talk about this a little bit on the podcast.
Knowing how to win.
Knowing how to win. But so if you had to give me one figure, you're also a science teacher, so I think throwing some numbers at you might work here.
Sure.
What percentage of the game do you think is mental versus physical?
It's a hard question to answer because when talking about physical, there's obviously different tiers of physicality. But I think...
But you group all the physical ones together. What percent is mental?
So you're saying that you have athletic people and non-athletic people?
I'm saying you have a bunch of players that are capable of performing...
At the highest level.
What percentage of that do I think, you know, relies on them getting the mental edge to also...
50%. Maybe even more. It's more than other sports as well because turnovers are so important. not throwing turnovers, and by the winning mentality, I mean knowing that you can trust your teammates.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I could take that 50-50 shot that so-and-so just took, but I'm just going to holster it and wait until that 50-50 shot is a 90-10 shot, trusting that my teammates will do that, knowing that my team has my back, knowing that we collectively will do whatever it takes to win and not do what we need in order to get our personal stats up or make it look good or, you know, just get a cool shot in.
Yeah, I think anyone could take that last little bit and sub out the word Phoenix and play you on repeat in a halftime huddle on a Bluetooth speaker.
Yeah, I think that'd
be
great.
Or a high-quality plasma TV, perhaps, and amp themselves up and know what needs to be done.
Yeah, definitely. But I just want to say that we're coming out of the basement. We're coming out strong. Hopefully next year we can double our win count and, you know, do some more damage.
Yeah, if you see this as a building year and you can get 8 or 9 next year, that's playoff conversation.
Yeah, definitely a building year. I mean, I think I am the second oldest person on the roster to Trey.
And you'll always be second.
I will always be second.
Well, cool. Thanks for coming on the podcast, Matt. And great. We'll get this out to Breeze Nation, and we'll see you in D.C. in 2 short weeks.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Adios.